Lois, since her death, into something that will be available and open to the public on some kind of basis. Right now, I think if you call, they'll arrange to have it open if you plan to visit there. But I don't think they have regular hours yet. But they plan to retain it in pretty much its present state and use it for activities that they'll determine the board, the Stepping Stones Foundation board, will determine in the future.
A hand right here, a gentleman with a red shirt.
Bill, what year was that?
1934. December the 11th, 1934.
Joe, can you tell me about the fourth tradition?
What is the fourth tradition?
Edition.
Oh, the fourth edition of the book. I thought it was a trap question. Probably is. Well, I think, is it next week you guys hold your group conscience on that? The Board of Trustees, the Literature Committee of the Board of Trustees decided we take a group conscience among the members and find out if they felt that there was a salient need for a fourth edition, and if so, what should be the composition of that fourth edition. So you'll find out next week. Stay tuned. And where's that going to be, by the way? They might want to know that. Oh, right here, in this very... Huh?
At the Blind Rec Center in San Diego. Where in San Diego? On Upas Street. Just east of Park on Upas. There's a question over here. Anonymity at the group level.
Right. Yeah, I think that's very important. And I think it's very important that we don't give a double message. Excuse me. The question was, what about anonymity at the group level? And we know that every group is autonomous and that the question of anonymity is a very personal thing. And within a group, you're not breaking the 11th tradition because it's not at the level of press, radio, and film. And if you're not filming, hopefully you're not filming the meeting. But the question was, how much anonymity should a person have within a meeting? And traditionally, it's as much as they want. You know, and I think this is my personal opinion. By the way, everything I say here is my personal opinion. I have no other. It's all just what occurs to me here in this moment. But my own personal opinion is sometimes we give double messages. We tell people they can have as much anonymity as possible, and then a lot of us break our anonymity at the meeting. So they think, well, that's what they're saying, but look what they're doing. And I think we may, in that sense, distance people who are... I know I was neurotic about being seen at an AA meeting when I first came in. Public drunk, but whatever happens to us, at our entry into AA, we don't want anyone to know. Like nobody knows. Yes, sir? I'm glad you mentioned that. That was reported by Dewey S. The gentleman said that in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, that Dr. Bob, and I've forgotten how it's worded, but the quote attributed to Dr. Bob was that not giving your full name at an AA meeting to a newcomer is as breaking the tradition as breaking publicly or whatever. And I think the sense of it may have been, which is not described in the quote, that if you were asked privately for your name or something, and you weren't, and you denied the person the name on a personal level. But the inference is that you should give your full name while you speak at an AA meeting. And we've never found that Dr. Bob ever sustained that. None of his family or anything else. He never, in any recording he ever did, ever used his name at all. And neither did Bill. They just started talking. So there's no evidence to believe that he would urge people in any way to give their full name. In fact, everything he believed in anonymity was really, we were no big deals. You know, we I'm not familiar with that. I know we took that out of all of the things on anonymity that we could, because it was reported by DUES that Dr. Bob said that, and we couldn't find any support other than his saying that, and Dr. Bob's family said it's not what he would say. It's not philosophically what he would say. So we've deleted it from things. Yeah. That one, maybe. Anyway, you find your way with that. Yes, gentleman in the back. Well, it comes up a lot, as you know, there's a the problem is our trademark. The words Alcoholics Anonymous and the circle and triangle and everything else. As we become more and more successful, there's a proliferation of using those symbols. Symbols are very powerful things to us. Symbols have meaning. And the words Alcoholics Anonymous, the symbol AA, and the circle and triangle are things we all own collectively. And the group conscience is, how do we feel at those appearing on t-shirts, mugs, earrings, you know, whatever. I mean, how do we feel about that? The General Service Board felt increasingly over the years becoming increasingly upset with, you know, they're on bed linens and towels, and my God, the proliferation of the use of those things. And as you misuse symbols, they become diminished in importance too. So I think the issue is we're getting clear on just what does the fellowship feel appropriate to the use of our symbols, you know, one of the group conscience questions. Does that answer your... Hopefully. Someone else? Yes, Marcos. Did you hear the question? Oh, thank you, Marcos. What can we do to help the Archives Committee specifically? And what's necessary is the fact is, as I mentioned, we're losing a lot of our early members, the people who have. And I'd like to introduce one of them right here in the front row, Virginia, if you will, who's been involved with AA since the late 30s. One of the things Paul and I did was spend some time with Virginia, and Paul had spent a lot of time with her earlier, picking her brains. You know, what was AA like, and what were the people like, and what were the important messages, and what were the conflicts at those times, and who were the important people involved? Every one of us has a piece. You know, it's like, I always get involved in this. I say that AA is like a hologram. You know, and each hologram is all the hologram. You know, and each component piece of the hologram is the whole hologram. And in each of our histories is all of our history. You know, and your own story is the whole collective story of Alcoholics Anonymous. Really, in a way. Every time you tell the story, you really restate all of our stories. And so all of us have a responsibility to carry as much of the story, our collective story, to the gatherers of this information as possible. And the early timers are getting old, and their memories are getting bad or whatever, and it's time for us to reach out and get them. And a side effect of that, in reaching out toward the old timers, it's found out we're bringing them back into the meetings where they belong. We need them. We need a critical mass of sobriety in the room. If half the room is under a year sobriety, in the average AA meeting, that's not a critical mass of long-term experience. We can do better than that if we get all of the people who aren't there to be there. We can form a very powerful center, you know, for a much finer meeting, you know, with much more principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. So two things can happen. We can get part of our history by an outreach program to the early timers, and also we can lure them back into feeling they're necessary. And help to go pick them up to bring them to meetings, because often they can't drive or they live far away and they feel unsafe driving at night or whatever. But we need that link. And I think we need it more today maybe than we did when there were a lot of them around, because statistically they're a very rare breed today. Does that answer your question, Marcos? Yeah, and we have some material. I'm going to leave with Marcos. By the way, I think we can all get involved in the pursuit of our history by reaching the members of the Archives Committee. Marcos works with the Spanish district, and Paul works with the Archives Committee and other members of the Archives Committee here. If we all can get in touch with them, would the members of the Archives Committee raise their hands so we can find one?
Stan!
They're going to be. John's going to introduce them in a moment. So hold your applause for these people. And that's how you get started. Ask them to help, and they'll give you the things, the tools, and the ideas to go and become part of the assemblage of our history. Someone else? Yes, sir.
Frank, do you think
I don't know. The question was, do I feel that Alcoholics Anonymous is being diluted by the proliferation of other 12-step programs? And I don't really know about that. I fear that unless they, these other groups, are as vigilant in protecting anonymity and all the other things that we are, we can be diminished by other people's actions. You know, all 12-step programs are blah, 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 blah. So we are our neighbor's keepers, you know, whether we like it or not. We're not loners anymore. We have a vested interest in everybody protecting the treasured anonymity examples, because outside people tend to tar us with the same brush, you know. So we have a need to keep them clear on the value and carry a message of the value of these things. It's all in communication. We can't expect somebody brand new to know about these things unless we show them things like markings on a journey or get them involved in AA Comes of Age or the history programs. Yes, my friend. Yeah. The comment was made that that increasingly it seems one of the stressful things Alcoholics Anonymous is facing is the fact of people coming into meetings with problems other than alcohol, and how often that might express itself. That stress might express itself with driving the people who are alcoholic out of the rooms, so that next week there'll be even more people who don't know what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is about. And I think that's that tends to support my own vision and what I hear at the General Service Conference. You know, I'm going to say something that very much my own opinion, and I hope it never leaves this room, certainly with my name attached to it. I have a cushy job and I want to get by. You know, don't say it. That's my conscience is saying the same thing, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I've never been cautious. But I think a heresy has come over AA in the last decade. And the heresy is you have to talk to get better. My experience is the silent people get better just as fast as the chatty ones. You know, you come out of a treatment center full of the need to speak. You know, you're sober 10 minutes, and you want to lead a meeting. And in New York, most of our meetings are discussion meetings. Now, if you have 50% of the room are sober less than a year, if everything else is being equal, 50% of that 1 hour is going to be talk that is largely the result of people who know very little about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, the people who know about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous are going to be under enormous stress during those 30 minutes. You know, they smoke a lot of cigarettes if they can. They drink a lot of cup of coffee. They eat themselves up. They wind up with heart disease and cancer and dermatoses and all kinds of things trying to be patient. And my point is not to be funny, but I think that's the reality of it. You know, that's the reality of the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous, you can go to a lot of AA meetings and not hear anything about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't have any problem with people talking. I'm a talker myself. But I can tell you when I came in, I had to listen. There's a healing in listening, I've found. And I find out I learn more when I listen. They don't come out of treatment centers with that information. They're not told that. They're told they have to participate. I mean, you hear some of these people speak, and a meeting doesn't count unless they're called on. I mean, when the man or woman leading the meeting stops speaking, there are 80 hands in the air. Often the people with their hands in the air didn't hear most of what the person said. They're getting ready to speak. And I think that's our problem. The problem isn't that we're drug addicts. The problem isn't that whatever. The problem is nobody hears the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in our meetings. That they're not Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. They're psychobabble meetings. Or they're whatever, a day in the life of meetings. Or group depression meetings. Or whatever meetings. Sharing meetings. Caring meetings. Whatever meetings. But they're not Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And if our history speaks to anything, we're powerful when we stick to what we're about. You know, people may not like that. People may rail about that. But I can tell you that's our best shot, to be who we are. You know, and I don't think we have a problem that 85% of the people coming to AA are multiple users. That was true with our co-founders. Certainly any alcoholic, if you're like me, you took anything you could get your little hands on. I never met a pill I didn't like, you know, any more than I met a drink I didn't like, you know. I don't think any of us come from nobility, but I think what we come from is a lack of discipline. The fact we can't control our own egos, we can't control our own mouths. And I can tell you, until we get those kinds of sacrifices into the minds of the people in treatment centers and into the newest member as well as the old member, what's going to happen is increasingly you're going to drive people away from the rooms, the people you need the most. You know, I might hate new early timers, I might find them righteous and arrogant, but that's who I need, somebody with a lot of sober, the day after day after day, that kind of life experience, you know, because that's what's going to save me, not somebody who wants to talk all the time about their stuff. I mean, that's just my my view. Other, you may hold other views. Yes?
Frank, in all fairness to the statistics of 50% of our meeting population being under a year, at the time that the paper was first published, what would you consider the average length of sobriety to be?
Well, I know Bill had 3.5 years, I think. And I guess many of them had less than a year, I'm guessing. I don't know if I have that, but I think you're right. I think that's a very good point. Yes, and I think we will survive, but I think we have to be careful, just the same as they had. No question they had conflict, but they were careful. And they all stayed in the room, you know? And Bill stayed with Dr. Bob 3 months, and that's necessary, you know? There's no question. I don't think there's a stress we couldn't face if we stay. Just in my personal recovery, there's no condition that I would face today that would make it necessary for me to drink if I faced it. And I'm sure that's true for us collectively. The point made is that a lot of us are leaving, you know, or forming private groups or going somewhere else. So the critical mass is changing. I mean, that's an observation. You may not share that. It makes you think, and you have to say, what can we do about it? And we've also changed enormously from the first year. You know, we're the second and third generation of alcoholics. Bill, his own sponsor didn't stay sober. You know, and Bill, they were dropping like flies. I mean, all through. Now, there's a critical mass of sobriety. I don't think Alcoholics Anonymous has to prove to anybody that we're an effective tool against acute alcoholism. We don't have to. That's a battle we've long since won. Our battle now is, can we be useful and happy sober? You know, that's a whole different context. And we're into a whole new, you know, I don't worry about not drinking again. My thing is, can I be useful and live a full, rich life today? Will the promises come true? And how do I have to live to get those promises? You know, it stops. AA isn't about not drinking. You know, AA is about living a life so drinking is unnecessary. I mean, we're in a whole different level, I think, collectively, because of the critical mass. We've won the battle of not drinking. You know, now can we win the battle of staying together and reaching a whole new quality of life? Maybe. Yes? Last question, sorry. Sorry for talking so much. What was the last part? You want it? Am I here? Man wants my job. I don't blame you. It's a cushy job, but I may look like a pushover. The question was about my job, and I thank you for that, because I usually don't talk to that on some misguided whatever. I'm not sure. Humility, maybe. I have a wonderful job. I work from about 8:45 to 4:45 or so, and my days are telephone calls, mammoth, and enormous correspondence. People are interested in their history. They're interested in the history of their group, how I developed in their community, what happened and what did. Well, if the General Service Office is anything, it's a repository of experience. Just that your own story is a repository of what happened to you to the best of your recollection. And all the General Service Office is a repository of group experience, which is really an archives. You know, and that's what I'm the custodian of. I work for the Trustees Archives Committee. They're my basic employer, which is a component of the General Service Board of Trustees. And we have visitors. We have a number of visitors I've met already that have been to the office. We have about 3,000 visitors a year stop in the tour the office. And when they get to the archives, they go, and that's the environment I work every day. No matter how scattered I am, how gnarled I am by my own neuroses, when I get to the office, I can go, because somehow we've survived our own hand. When I hear my own story, I hear that. But somehow, with all my wrong choices, God did for me what I was unable to do for myself. And that's true for us collectively. You know, and I hear that again and again with the letters I write, with the sharings I do. I work about maybe 25 weekends a year. I'm invited a lot of places, not always as nice as this. A lot of those are working. We have board weekends, as you know. The General Service Conference happens in New York in April. We have three other board meetings a year that I participate in, and we have AAWS board and other boards that meet, so I'm involved in that. But I travel maybe, I get to go out maybe 2 weekends a month, generally speaking, on the average. Some I'm invited as a guest of my own, nothing to do with my job, to tell my story or whatever. And some I'm asked to be a representative to bring some information that I have just from being where I am in the job. I've been at the General Service Office for 13 years. I'm sober 20 almost in this summer. And 13 of those years I've worked at the General Service Office. The first 6 of them I've been administrative assistant, I was involved in the directories, which if you ever know is nothing you want to get involved in if you want a long, full, happy life. Especially when I was involved in it. Because we had people in the directory that were dead 15, 20 years, and they'd be in the next year, and people would write letters, and they'd still be in there, you know. And if you were elected delegate, your home group automatically vanished from the directory, it would seem. All of the chair people in South Florida vanished from the computer 1 year. I mean, just enormous if we can do anything wrong, we did, and did it again and again and again. I would get sick if I was at a forum or anything, and people said D-I-R-E-C-T-O-R-Y. You know, I would just want to be somewhere else and someone else. But I got through that. And during those years, I was also privileged to be the Secretary of Trustees Archives Committee. So when Nell Wing retired, who was the first archivist of the office, she was Bill's secretary for 20, this is a long answer to a question. She was Bill's secretary 22 of those years, and then she became the archivist after Bill died. So Nell had more information in her little head than anybody could imagine. You know, she knew right where to go for the papers and who said what to who. She knew everybody. And she had something on everyone. She's one of those retentive minds. I had none of those gifts, so I had to learn to make my own way. And anyway, one day she decided to retire. We thought we'd have to drag her screaming on her 101st birthday, you know, pulling the papers out of her hand and saying, there, that's enough. But she decided to retire, and I was the one that the group conscience thought should have the job, and it's wonderful. It's the best job in AA, and as I said to somebody, it feeds a deep part of my soul. I'd never been early for work before, and now I'm early for work. I love to stay there and do the work. As you know, AA has pulled a commitment from me I didn't know I had. It has reached a part of me that I never know I owned, and I have conviction and belief in things. That's why I think our history is important. You know, I may not know everything, and I don't attest to, but I can tell you what I know I believe with enormous amount of feeling about it, that what we have is very rare, and it's an incredible truth. And I'm a very intense person. You know, I worry about the paper clips. I'm the kind of person, you know, I had to stop reading the New York Times because I couldn't get to work. I'd want to write 10 letters and pick it and pray and all about all this stuff. So I care, you know, and I overreact probably. Some people are cooler, fortunately, in the group conscience. But I worry about what I see and hear at our meetings. I think there are serious concerns. I think it'd be spiritually arrogant to think nothing bad can ever happen to us. That wasn't the testimony of the groups that went before. They weren't stupid or foolish or unthoughtful, or they weren't vulgar, stupid, you know, whatever people. They were just like us, a cross-section of good and bad. But they lost their way. And a funny thing happens, individually, I think, for me, and collectively, we went faster when we lost our way, you know, into more neuroses, into more things that separate us. If you've ever seen an argument in your home group, by the way, I always like the thing, if you can stay sober in AA, you can stay sober anywhere. I always like that. That's especially true at business meetings, you know, and people in service. You know, service is a high-risk game. You know, the passionate arguments we have over the Oreo cookies, who's eating them or didn't buy them or why the wrong kind. And I remember once I made coffee for a group for 18 months, and one time I put cinnamon in the coffee thinking I'd give them a little class. Well, I could have, rat poison would have been more easily acceptable than that. And I was hurt. I mean, profoundly hurt and enraged and driven to get even. All those things. But I mean, that's what happens in us if we're not careful and stay to what, you know, as the big book says, we are people who normally do not mix. And that's easy to find out if we get into a business meeting. Yeah. So, thanks, John.
Thank you, Frank.